Audio clips from book, We Will Never Let You Down, Encounters with Valthor and Journeys Beyond Earth, of Elena Danan. Elena Danan's new, 2021, book, We Will Never Let You Down, casts much-needed light on the diplomatic negotiations between President Dwight Eisenhower and Valiant Thor, an ambassador of the Galactic Federation of Worlds, from 1958 to 1961. Now we finally have a fresh and new perspective, directly from Valiant Thor himself, of the unsuccessful negotiations that were conducted. We learn about his warnings about negotiating with an alliance of alien predator races, Eisenhower's betrayal by MJ-12 in signing secret agreements with this exploitative alliance, and how the Galactic Federation has ever since been mitigating the effects of these nefarious agreements through numerous covert actions to raise human consciousness and spark a planetary awakening. A must-read for all wanting to prepare for the momentous global changes that lie ahead. Michael Sala. Rescued as a child by extraterrestrials, Elena Danan kept contact with them all her life and wrote her story in the bestseller, A Gift from the Stars. We Will Never Let You Down, follows up by depicting contacts the author had with Commander Val Valiant Thor and her journeys in this solar system. Written at the brink of a new era, this book is a testimony of the presence and dedication of benevolent extraterrestrials protecting Earth. This book includes also precious messages from Commander Thor Hanerjin from the Galactic Federation of Worlds, revelations about Valthor's sojourn in the Pentagon, his relation with Dwight Eisenhower, his stay in Russia, the political background involving secret treaties with the Grey Alliance and the complex underlying alien-human diplomacy. Astonishing details, unknown until now, are revealed in this book. Born in France, Elena Danan is a fine arts graduate, archaeologist, druidess, shaman, energy and sound practitioner. She worked as a field archaeologist for 20 years, mainly in Egypt. Balancing both scientific education and cognitive abilities, Elena narrates with honesty, pragmatism and simplicity the incredible adventures she was privileged to live and share. About this book, in review from Amazon, including, A Look Inside Book. Life brings unexpected gifts sometimes, when you keep your heart open. Never did I hope to meet one day this man who came from outer space, whose goal was to try to save our world. He worked hard with the leaders of this planet in the hope of freeing for humanity a path to a safe and brighter future, and in the hope of putting into place assistance programs working toward empowering human resistance and technological resources to stand against the Orion threat. Valiant Thor, also called Commander Val, landed his ship on a morning of March 1957 in the U.S. state of Virginia, where he met President Dwight Eisenhower. Val was sent by the Council of Five and the Great Council of the Galactic Federation of Worlds, carrying a diplomatic message of assistance against the threatening Orion Grey Alliances who bore the name of Nebu. Literature has been written about him, his encounters with several human beings and the way in which he inspired them greatly. Val was a diplomat well trained by the Galactic Federation and the Council of Five, in respect of the Terran cultures and their belief systems. He came as a messenger, not as a converter. He wasn't here to change the religious faiths, but to encourage faith in human nature and potential, engaging us to open our awareness to who we truly are, to the nature of our birthrights, freedom and sovereignty. The Galactic Federation has this law, sacred above all, of non-interference in the natural evolution of primitive worlds, dedicated to supporting and protecting all life. Our path of learning needs to be walked, for the purpose is the road, and the reward is the destination. Commander Valthor belongs to the Tal race, a humanoid-looking colony from the Mantis star system, K-62 Liron, who settled on Venus a long time ago, alongside other races. He was commissioned by the Galactic Federation of Worlds and the Council of Five to Terra, Earth, to meet with the main leaders of our planet. One of them was the 34th U.S. President Dwight D. Eisenhower. Valthor delivered to him a warning against the malevolent extraterrestrials from the Orion Group, with whom Eisenhower's government had freshly passed agreements. Saved this video regarding untold history of the USA. Commander Valthor spent some time in the Pentagon, guiding and advising President Eisenhower and secretly setting the foundations for a benevolent Earth extraterrestrial cooperation that would become later known as the Earth Alliance. Despite all his efforts to avoid a fateful outcome for humanity, the US president didn't succeed in rescinding the agreements made with the invaders, and which was signed behind his back by his military administration. These events will be developed in more complete detail throughout this book, based on my personal encounters with Commander Valthor. Before going further, and especially if you haven't read A Gift from the Stars, here are the circumstances in which I met the person mentioned as Thor Hanerdian. It all began when, at the age of 9, I experienced a hostile abduction by grey aliens from Zeta Reticuli. In the process, I was rescued by another alien ship composed of a benevolent crew from different origins, working for the Galactic Federation of Worlds. At their command was Thor Hanerdian, an aerial pilot from Ishara, Taygeta, in the Pleiades, who has been watching over my life since these events. He is now a fleet commander and mission coordinator, assigned to a space station in orbit of Earth, one of the many cloaked outposts of the Galactic Federation of Worlds in our solar system. Between the Galactic Federation of Worlds, the Andromeda Council and the Council of Five, this star system is crowded with more than 60 motherships belonging to these three benevolent groups. We can add to this list the Ashtar Galactic Command and the huge enemy fleets roaming everywhere. The huge cloaked motherships positioned in orbit of Earth are called by Thorhan stations. Thorhan and I have regular telepathic and physical contacts, hence some explanation may be required for you to understand how all of this works. Headline, implant. The small greys who kidnapped me when I was 9 years old inserted a transdimensional tracker at the back of my skull, in order to monitor me at a distance as they usually do, as part of their hybridization programs. This tracker was meant to emit a pulsing signal relaying to a grey's central station somewhere. When Thorhan and his crew rescued me, they deactivated this signal before their ship could be located by the enemy. Nonetheless, this task turned out to be not as easy as they expected. The device was placed by the Greys deep into a sensitive part of my brain, and its removal was too risky. In their haste, Thorhan's medical crew member, Myra, hacked the device and repurposed it, by attuning it to the higher frequency spectrum of the Galactic Federation, a bandwidth that neither the Greys nor the Reptilians can access. From that moment onward, I was then able to communicate with anyone in the Galactic Federation attuned to the safe frequency signal of this device. Only Thorhan possesses the frequency code of my device, and all communications are monitored by him. I normally only interact with him, but it may happen occasionally that I have contacts with three other beings allowed by Thorhan to attune to my device: Myra from Sirius B, the scientist lady who was part of my rescue team, Koron, a higher density being from Dakorat in the Ishara, Taygeta, star system, and Anax, Egaroth from the Council of Five. After all these years, my scalp remains still sore on this particular spot, especially when combing my hair. This sensitivity is due to the regular electromagnetic activity linked to the implant. Although the frequency bandwidth used by the Greys is not noticeable because it is low enough to match the human body frequency, the TANs used by the Galactic Federation is of a much higher octave, which cannot be accessed by the Greys and Reptilians. This may explain the physical discomfort I feel when I am tired or sick, because I am vibrating in a much lower electromagnetic frequency. When I am well rested and healthy, I don't feel any discomfort. As I was brought back home after my rescue, I kept having headaches for months, due also to the fact that this implant had been triggered considerably. Despite all possible scans and examinations with the tools in use at the time, 1970s, nothing could ever be found. It was explained to me by Myra, the medical lady from Thorhan's crew, that this implant is transdimensional and therefore not detectable with technologies used on Earth. The headaches disappeared after a few months, as my energy is attuned with the strang frequency signal of this alien device. And it was only years later, when I was 18, that for the first time I heard Thorhan's voice within my head. It felt like a hail was being stuck into my head, accompanied by a low buzzing sound vibrating through all my skull. I fell on my knees and grabbed my head between my hands, frightened. It was then that I heard a click in the precise location of the device, and the young and vibrant voice of Thorhan spoke in my head, quite loudly, "Don't worry, we are just making some attunements." Since then, Thorhan has taught me how to activate the device, in order to contact him by myself. You see, these very sensitive and finely tuned technologies can also react our energy impulses due to emotional overload. Thorhan isn't at all times spying on me, of course, but if I ever produce a sudden emotional impulse such as fright, it sends out a signal automatically. He showed me how to activate a discharge of energy detected on the device, coupled with a powerful visualization of him or the person I wish to contact, if of course this person is attuned already with the frequency code of my device. No one can hack it. Communicating via such a device is like dialing a frequency number, if so to speak. Just picking up the phone is not enough, you must also dial a number. You need to do more than just switch it on, you must also manifest the intention to connect with one of the persons in tune with this device, and manifesting the thought of this person is like dialing their personal frequency signature. It is quantum technology. Headline: Channeling. Now, this is when you grasp the true power of these devices, and realize how dangerous these can be if in the wrong hands. Here is a staggering example. In a few occasions, I found myself talking to people a bit too much, in a confident tone, about some information I was not supposed to disclose at the time. Instantly, I felt the device activating and a fog seizing my mind. I was incapable of talking, losing my words and even the ability to form sounds in my throat, and my mind and memory were going temporarily blank, for the time I stubbornly tried to fight against the process. I was simply being frozen. As soon as I gave up the struggle, all stopped and switched back to normal. Literally, like a button switch. These devices are made of a technology that is able to remotely control your body and even your mind. Imagine what it can do when in the wrong hands. This remote takeover goes way further than monitoring you, or just acting as a communicator. Because this technology can operate physical control by distance, it can be very often mistaken for traditional channeling, which is a different process even if it may look the same when witnessed from outside. Proper channeling is in fact a temporary possession of your body by a foreign entity, alien or not. And when I say or not, I mean it can be either artificial intelligence, ghost, or an entity good or bad. And unfortunately, there are very bad ones out there. It is not necessary to have an alien implant to communicate with aliens. As it works also with spirits and ghosts, some beings are powerful enough to take control of your body, by a method of possession. Consent is needed, and keep in mind that fear is also a form of consent. Channeling is a less scary word, but it involves the same process, a being slipping into the body of another being. I happened to use the function of my device enabling remote physical manipulation of my upper body a few times, at the request of a friend who ran a show, as it enabled people to ask questions directly. It was called channeling, but in truth it wasn't. Thorhan was on the orbital station and I allowed him to remotely control my head and neck with the device, a technical operation using quantum technology. We both connected. Him upstairs on the orbital station and me downstairs on Earth, and I invited him to control remotely my head and shoulders. I stayed conscious during the whole process and was able to reverse it at any moment, taking back control very easily. Eyes closed, I could see what he saw and hear what he heard. I could also hold a telepathic conversation simultaneously while he was in control of my upper body speaking through my voice. Interestingly, I happened from times to perform this remote technique with Anax, who is an Agaroth. This species has a different anatomy, taller, slimmer, with an elongated neck and a larger head. Each time Anax remotely controlled my upper body, the sensations were different from when it was Thorhan, who is human. Anax doesn't need to humidify his mouth, so he didn't think about doing it when I worked with him, and the result was me having a very dry throat afterwards. The stretch on my neck was also a slight discomfort. In truth, I was new to all of this and I was propelled to the front of the stage at great speed, without even realizing what was happening. All I wished was to please my friends and genuinely share the magic with the entire world. Well, even if he did it at first by courtesy and kindness, Thorhan put a quick end to it for three main reasons. I felt comfortable entertaining the public in such a way and he knew it. A lot of questions were a waste of his time, and more importantly, it started to be monetized by the curator of the show, which made me feel even more uncomfortable. This was the wake-up signal and I was very glad it stopped. Headline: Telepathy. Telepathy can occur with or without the implant, but for a more stable communication we usually use it. I was astonished to discover that there are two different ways to perform telepathy: mind melt and mind talk. The difference would be comparable, for instance, to two different radio channels. Mind melt is an intimate connection of thoughts, similar to mind reading. When the connection is made, from mind to mind, each person knows about everything in each other's mind. Unless mental shields are in place, mind melt can investigate very far into memories. This method is not used to communicate in general, and is even forbidden by the codes of the Federation unless in private settings. Mind melt is performed on particular occasions, such as in the act of lovemaking, also to investigate a prisoner's mind to retrieve data, or as well when there is enough trust between two individuals who desire to share a great amount of information very fast. Thorhan and I use mind melt from times to time, when telling a story takes too long. Using mind melt, you get not only the story but also the pictures, smells, sounds. Mind talk is different. The communication happens on a different brainwave frequency that has no connection with the memory thought frequency as described above. This is the most common means of communication used by the majority of species in the Galactic Federation of Worlds, knowing that in social context, most of the time, the spoken language doubles over the mind talk. For instance, you can have a person physically speaking to you and hear their voice in your head at the same time, which is a bit unsettling at the start, but you get used to it relatively quickly. With mind talk, you can also get visions and feelings, the same as with mind melt. Be it by direct telepathy or by using the implant, Thorhan and I have developed this unique method. I can either look through his eyes or he can look through mine. Here is how it works. If he wants to show me something that he is witnessing up there, wherever he is, he first makes telepathic contact and invites me to close my eyes. I do so, and images appear behind my closed eyelids, as a visual transmission of what he sees. The reverse also works. A last element to note, when we are both in telepathic connection, we hear everything the other hears, and we can have a slight peripheral vision of each other's environment, exactly as in a live remote viewing experience. About remote viewing, I heed to precise that the Galactic Federation of Worlds or any other strategic structures have screen shields around their ships and facilities. This forbids any remote viewing intrusion. A screen shield is a hologram projecting a false reality in order to deceive spying attempts. Headline: Holography. Thorhan introduced me to this method when I asked if I could interview some beings as part of a personal project I had in mind. This project involved interaction with dangerous entities and it was out of the question, of course, for me to risk any direct contact with them, be it physical or even telepathic. So, Thorhan showed me this amazing holographic device allowing me to converse with these beings indirectly. It consists of a tiny pyramid made of a translucent material, set within four holographic panels appearing to unfold when it switches on. I connect with Thorhan by telepathy and the device, attuned to Thorhan's mind, broadcasts via him my holographic image and voice. Then, through Thorhan's vision and hearing, I can see the beings in front of him and hear them answering back to me. This method is quite practical because I am able to take notes in the meantime. Headline, Link of the Heart. There is a bond from heart to heart between beings sharing a strong emotional connection, such as Thorhan and I have, and also between myself and Annex, whom I call my Igaroth father. It could be described as a quantum link allowing information to resonate from consciousness to consciousness, using pure love as a medium. It is the most wonderful way to communicate, from soul to soul, on the frequency of love. There is nothing safer, more powerful and higher in frequency, than this communication. Headline, Physical Abduction. In terms of physical contacts, there are two ways of traveling physically with your body, from the ground to a ship, either by teleportation, which is basically a quantum molecular transfer, or via an anti-gravity beam. Unlike teleportation, where you disappear from somewhere and you reappear somewhere else, an anti-gravity beam is a large ray projected from a ship toward a target, unfolding physically through linear space. It lifts the person upwards toward a ship, and what is quite amazing in this process, is that it can also de-densify any solid obstacle in the way. That is how abductees can be pulled out through roofs, walls and closed windows. While you're in this strange beam, interestingly as well, you feel numb and paralyzed. I personally prefer to be teleported, it is less traumatic. Firstly, I have vertigo, and also because teleportation lasts less than 5 seconds. All you feel is a fizzy shudder, and you are momentarily blinded by a big flash of light, but it's okay. Headline, Light Transfer Resonance. This process is another very interesting one, which always fascinates people when I talk about it. With the unfolding of the course of events and the war increasing in intensity, physical abductions became risky, as Thorhan's ship needed to come down into the Earth's lower atmosphere for that purpose. We started to use quantum resonance to transfer my light being, an operation that could be performed over a longer distance, such as to the orbital station directly. This transfer uses a high-frequency channel out of reach from lower-density entities. It is safer than teleportation. There is no linear spatial physical travel, it is a quantum teleportation of the astral body. Thorhan calls this technique the light transfer resonance. Being a trained shaman makes it very easy for me to secure my body and detach my light being, astral body. I just need to wait for Thorhan to transfer me to his ship out of reach from danger. It feels like physical teleportation, but it is less intense in sensations. When I touch the destination anchor point, I could remain as an ethereal light being, but this is not a fun experience. So, thanks to the adjustments set up by Thorhan, the particles of my light being are densified to match the appropriate environment, and I temporarily materialize as a physical being. The particles of my being are stabilized by a force field, so I can have a physical experience during the time of my visit. The settings of this procedure include also a special suit, made of a clear blue material with double brown stripes on the shoulders and arms, a brown belt and black boots. This brown belt is similar to those everyone wears, with a different color for each race. It is a density frequency stabilizer. My hair always floats free and it is the color of my natural shade. Enhancements to my appearance, such as makeup, synthetic nails, and jewelry, don't transfer because they are not part of my biological being. The only jewelry that transfers is a crystal bangle that vibrates at a very high rate, and my crystal Merkaba. Also, I always seem to materialize in an age around my 30s, which at first surprised me, but Thorhan explained to me that the aging and decay of the flesh avatar doesn't impact the appearance of the being that inhabits it. If the duration of my visit is limited due to the containment of the force field, when I get tired, it weakens and I start to de-densify. Distance also has its limits. Indeed, there is only so far I can go, without severing the link with my physical avatar left on Earth. In some earth cultures, it is called the silver cord. It cannot be stretched indefinitely, and if it breaks, the soul cannot come back into the body. This is clinical death. I remember one day when I was on board Thorhan's ship, and we were approaching the outskirts of the solar system. He wanted to show me Neptune, that day, and the magnificence of these moments that we share may sometimes lead us to forget about some practical details. He pushed the ship farther toward Pluto's orbit, and suddenly, I felt dizzy and nauseous, a sensation that increased as we moved forward. My fingertips became numb and my lips started to tingle. It was the same sensation as if I had a hypoglycemic fit. My breath shortened as I felt my chest compressed. Thorhan realized suddenly what the problem was, and he immediately rerouted the ship back to Earth. "You've reached your limits," he said to me. The symptoms disappeared as we got closer to Earth again. Now I know how far I can go with this method, at least without killing my avatar. Headline: Lightship. This technique was taught to me by my dear Anax, who performs interdimensional travels. The lightship is a vessel allowing to travel across distances, time and dimensions, sliding on the cosmic web or leaping through the space continuum by shortcuts. It can transport consciousness, or the essence as Anax says people call it. As I will explain further, the travel of consciousness knows no limit in the distance, contrary to light being or astral travel, which has limited distance. A light ship can have any geometrical shape, generated in correspondence with the mathematical pattern of your energy. We are entering here the field of light, or sacred geometry, or dynamic geometry. A light ship is a personal vessel constructed with our energy field and powered by the mind. When built with pure light, life energy, geometrical shapes are power generators and sometimes portals. Headline: Projection of Consciousness. This method doesn't need any ship or technology, as in this case, nothing physical or even ethereal travels distance. It is a projection of consciousness, or remote viewing as some call it. It can be done by anchoring the mind onto a target, by or atom resonance, or it can be sometimes a beautiful and amazing journey of exploitation and discovery. It was Koron, a fifth density Pleiadian from Dakorat, who taught me this. He first took me along with him, and after a few times, I gained confidence and was able to perform this type of journey by myself. There is no limit to remote viewing, and this is how one day, I saw myself contemplating our magnificent galaxy from outside, floating in the big wide space. And now, the best way to describe how these travels work is to share with you at first some of my experiences. Next is drawing of There's an Erase from Andromedan Council. Headline: I can fly. One of the most wonderful gifts in my life involved getting to know a spaceship pilot. Thorhan Erdian, the man who rescued me when I was a child, works for the Galactic Federation of Worlds and leads a fleet of 15 ships. You may have heard, especially if you follow New Age social media channels, people fantasizing about the Galactic Federation of Light. Well, in truth, there isn't a thing named as such. This is an interpretation of what exists under the name Ara Anatarushari. Federated alliance of highly developed civilizations created a long time ago with the purpose of maintaining peace, justice and balance in this galaxy. The Galactic Federation of Worlds has, in this star system, the main task of raising the awareness of the Terrans about the subversion of their societies by invasive species and exposing corrupt institutions in liaison with these enemies. They monitor extraterrestrial threats and infiltration, work at deprogramming mind control, rescuing abductees and performing many other benevolent and helpful tasks. Their attention was drawn to our little blue planet in the outskirt of this galaxy, by the Andromedan Council, who foresaw a catastrophic future if help wasn't provided immediately. The Galactic Federation of Worlds has, since, avoided us to undergo many fatal outcomes, often by disabling missiles and nuclear devices for instance, but they cannot do the work of self-growth and evolution of consciousness for us. Their renowned law of non-intervention is not just a rule but an ethic of free will, as they consider that a being, as well as any civilization, must evolve by itself by reaching a higher level of consciousness, and nobody can do that work for anyone else. They are not here to save us, but to help us save ourselves. They can totally intervene physically and wipe out all evil on Earth in one day, but humanity of Earth wouldn't learn the lesson and grow from it, and the universe would keep on sending more challenges until the child teaches maturity. Also, an open war against the regressive aliens, with planet Earth as a battleground, would be devastating. The people from the Galactic Federation of Worlds are the brave, dedicated unsung heroes, fighting above Earth to defend our planet from toxic extraterrestrial threats. Physically, involved with many governments' white hats to fight back the deep state, and, under and above the ground of this planet. We are at war, a terrible war, the greatest and the last for humanity's freedom, and we are lucky to have these powerful allies on our side. They are real, physical beings with interdimensional technology, and even though they also work at uplifting human consciousness, the Galactic Federation of Worlds is a real, physical alliance of federated civilizations, not an ethereal spiritual organization of floating light beings. They are people like us, only born somewhere else, sometimes looking different and using other technologies. The last thing they want is that we put ourselves down as inferior beings, kneeling in adoration at the feet of the gods, that they aren't. It is time for humanity of Earth to stand up, on their feet, and reach adulthood, as sovereign galactic and interdimensional beings, and to stop considering themselves inferior to anything religious, social, political or even spiritual. So, Thorhan works for this amazing galactic institution and since I was 16, at many occasions of what I would name invitation rather than abduction, he has been allowing me to take place in the co-pilot seat of his ship. It was at first a sort of a game to entertain me, but with time, as I was able to comprehend certain subtle concepts of the space-time continuum, he showed me progressively the use of different command controls. Thorhan always seemed amused with my genuine, spontaneous amazement, and with my excitement to always try a new command. Of course, the seat was often disconnected from the main command, as he wouldn't each chance an unfortunate maneuver to happen. These crafts are very sensitive. The front board panel includes all sorts of monitors, and the main controls are integrated in the two pilot seats, mostly in the armrests. These monitors are holographic and look like simple glass panels when they are switched off. They are activated by thought. If I can now roughly, and very dangerously, pilot a scout ship, I would never be able to start it or either stop it, as it is done by the pilotess mind. Indeed, every military personnel in the Federation has an implant in their head allowing them to connect to different vehicles and devices. A spaceship only responds to the specific brain waves of its captain and second pilot, who can attune to the frequency of the ship's central intelligence. It has been explained to me that these ships are alive, believe it or not. It is at first a little bit strange to comprehend the concept of artificially animated matter. We hear about artificial intelligence, but as we know it, what we call artificial intelligence is not really alive. It is just how we branded a highest level of technological devices. Thorhan explained it to me very simply, once, by these words: consider artificial intelligence as you call it on Earth, but upgraded to the next level, imbued with a basic consciousness. These ships are made of living, synthetic materials, responding to the pilot's mind control, consciousness to consciousness. And both ship and pilots are mind-bound as soon as attuned to each other. Some special ships even match the pilot's DNA. How they bring consciousness into the making of a ship is quite, to use the right expression, mind-blowing. To navigate a craft by thoughts, the pilots set up first a destination target, by entering coordinates into the middle panel prominent between the two seats. Then, they will lay the palm of their hands onto hexagonal pads and use what they call resonance travel, which is basically a quantum leap driven by consciousness. I must specify the term driven, because powered is something different. Indeed, I've spoken until now about navigation but not yet about how these ships are actually powered. If these crafts are driven by either holographic or electronic control devices, or by consciousness, the power is not supplied by the mind of the pilots, of course, nor by the navigation instruments, it is something else. All their technology, be it absolutely anything, is powered by what they call Freel, a universal force present everywhere in the universe and even in the void of space. They can harvest it and store it in a special type of crystals unknown to Earth and use it to power everything. I have seen the core engine of some spacecrafts. It is a large cylinder that measures about 5 to 6 feet large, and 9 to 12 feet high, depending on the size and model of the ship. Inside of these cylinders is what resembles a plasma moving in orange-yellow, or sometimes blue-green, luminescent coils. These ships can also shift density and make themselves invisible by a cloaking technique. This last trick is done by slightly raising the vibratory frequency field on the outer skin of the ship. Interestingly, when in damp atmospheric environments, this can cause condensation and it can create the illusion of clouds shaped like flying saucers. This, of course, fools only primitive populations on the ground. Lonization can be another way of powering a craft, by creating some sort of void at the front of the ship, hovering it into a chosen direction. They use also interdimensional vortices, that we also call wormholes, and which are, as it was explained to me, some type of black holes without a singularity or shortcuts, as we would say. The scout ships of the Federation, generally flying saucer type, are not equipped for resonance travels on long distances, so they are transported in large size cargo ships, that are generally in the shape of a long cylinder or a huge discoid mothership. In general, and I precise in general, anything huge and rectangular is reptilian, and anything triangular is either gray, huge black silent triangles with sharp angles, or Earth US military, smaller, silvery metallic, rounded angles and engine sound. There are also discoid cargo or motherships that are not from the Galactic Federation. The above was just to mention that if it is triangular or rectangular, in the doubt, run. That being said, my first attempt at thought navigation wasn't truly amazing. Thorhan was maybe a bit too enthusiastic that night, when he gave me the commands of a scout ship after he had attuned the frequency of my implant to its navigation system. Also, I can get a bit overexcited sometimes, who wouldn't be in this situation? Once you are attuned to the central intelligence of the craft, it goes wherever you think you want to go. You really need to focus. Weren't far from Earth and I managed quite well during the first minute, until I realized Mars was in sight and I exclaimed, "Oh my god, is that Mars?" Firstly, these ships can go really fast. And secondly, Thorhan has amazing reflexes. I saw Mars from very close up that day. I am not sure I will get my spacecraft license anytime soon. So, for further escapades in our solar system, I was not allowed any more to touch anything else other than the electronic and holographic navigation controls, and on scout ships only. When on board Thorhan's superb fleet command ship, this doesn't even happen. Headline, Jupiter's clouds. On a quiet day in October 2020, I was invited by Thorhan for an impromptu voyage. By light transfer resonance, I materialized in the hold of his command ship, next to the large central column unit containing the plasma core engine. As it requires always a few seconds to adjust my frequency, my head remained dizzy for a few minutes. It is quite a shock to the system. As I explained it already in much greater details in the introduction, when I beam up by using the method of light transfer resonance, my physical envelope stays behind on Earth and it is my light being that is teleported. As the particles recompose when touching destination, it adapts to the frequency rate to take physical form. I do not need, in this case, a frequency belt to be clipped around my waist, as it would be necessary if I was teleporting with my physical envelope. While the particles of my body completed their materialization, I heard the door sliding and someone coming toward me. As I stepped forward, Thorhan gathered me in his arms to keep me from stumbling. His large bright blue eyes were shining with joy. "Where are we?" I asked feebly. "Heading for Jupiter. Come, I'll show you." I followed him to the command room, where I discovered on the central screen the curvature of the planetary giant in its orange orb. I understood Thorhan was assuredly visiting the outpost of the Ash-Eri, Sirius B, military faction, that we know more popularly under the name of Ashtar Command. Thorhan regularly visits this place to discuss coordinated operations with some officers. "Am I allowed to go with you?" I asked skeptically. "Yes, you're with me," Thorhan replied. "And if there is a problem, Saladin will bring you back." I noticed at this very moment the young Pleiadian pilot with long straight blonde hair and his usual bright smile, waving at me from his seat. "Hey Saladin," I exclaimed. "How are you?"
"Always good.
I wanted to thank you again for having saved my life when I was taken by reptilians last year. The episode of my abduction by Nagas in 2019 is detailed in my book, A Gift from the Stars." "Well, Thorhan sent us at the time.
Still, you saved me, so thank you. I suppose I had a big fright that day. I sensed Thorhan's arm around my waist, bringing me closer to him."
"Everything you will say and think," he whispered in my hair, "will be monitored once we approach Jupiter's orbit. So if there is anything you want to tell me, the time is now." I stared into his slanted metallic blue eyes, in which I could see his soul sparkling with billion stars. In his arms, the universe could crumble and vanish. I was safe, feeling at home. Words were not necessary, for he knew my heart and I knew his. Thorhan knew that what mattered the most for me was to be in his presence, and to share these precious moments together. It was what provided me with the courage to keep going on, living down below on this planet and doing what I had to do. He smiled at me. "No more personal thoughts once we are down there," he said to me telepathically, his eyes anchored to mine. "Will you manage it?"
"If I stay away from you."
Thorhan's laughter filled the cabin. The ship was entering Jupiter's dramatic turbulence and the ionic shield was up, which altered the visibility. Nonetheless, I could guess beyond the bright glare of the external ionic field, huge scary clouds, vortices of smoke and dark deep atmospheric ravines. It was the most frightening trip I had ever experienced on board Thorhan's ship. It was a similar feeling to being on a little boat crossing a stormy ocean, with the difference that our ship was perfectly stable, just as if the front screen displayed a movie. Which it was not. Weird crackling robotic sounds spoke out of a control board and Saladin replied in a strange language I had never heard before.
"Ash-Eran," Thorhan replied telepathically. "They're scanning our ship and they want to know who you are. They sensed Anax's implant. Eggarths are not part of the Ashtar Command. At the time I was writing my previous book, my Eggaroth protector Anax had, with my consent, placed a protection device in one of my shoulders. This implant regulates my energy balance and keeps it at a high frequency, for my safety, and warns Anax of any etheric aural attack against me." Anax beamed down one night in my bedroom and sat on the edge of my bed, smiling with a loving radiance, as he always does. He gently laid a hand on my forearm and asked if I would consent to him providing me with this kind of supplementary device. I said yes, of course. What a privilege. I turned on my side and he lifted my pajama shirt. Anax pulled a flat rectangular object from his pocket and applied it on my skin. Effectively, as he said, I felt nothing. When he removed the tool, I could see three red marks in the shape of a triangle. Anax explained to me that this was a triangulation method that allows implanting trackers of a very high frequency. It is a technology used by the Council of Five, and which is very recognizable. The three dots are the physical anchors for the tracker, which vibrates in a much higher density in the middle of the triangle. When an axe checks me out, I can feel an itch on that spot. As I stood beside Thorhan, watching our descent into the Jovian atmosphere, a cold shiver ran through my body. From now on, my thoughts would be monitored by the Ashtar Command's security system. I took a deep breath. I was ready. Or kind of. Don't worry, said Thorhan with an incredible calm, you re with me? The descent seemed endless, and although we were traversing terrifying storms, violent winds and threatening titanic clouds, the ship was sliding smoothly, with ease. The structures of the Ashtar outpost started to appear through the thick oak of fog. I had already seen this base when in telepathic contact with Thorhan, a few times already, but today I was there. And it was very intimidating. I know it was just a military facility, but yet, its reputation was well known. Protected under a gigantic dome, the Jovian city extended with its glistening roads, bridges and buildings, across a vast surface. It was in fact a ship, which landed a very long time ago when the Galactic Federation of Worlds requested help to protect our solar system. Separatist faction from the compromised Ashtar Alliance, which had been infiltrated by reptilians. The Ashtar Galactic Command was a rebel, independent, mercenary military group from Sirius B, vowed to maintain peace in this galaxy. We descended at the level of the high buildings, our ship sliding in between the silvery towers until reaching the entrance of a tunnel, where it engulfed into. Purple neon-like fluorescent lights were pulsing on the sides, and soon, the ship emerged into a landing bay where other vehicles were parked in the far side, aligned in neat rows. Thorhan winked at me and invited me to leave the command room. Followed by Saladin, we walked down the three narrow steps, then through the circular corridor giving access to the main airlock. The sliding door appeared, opened, and vanished behind us, as part of the wall. I always have a tendency to forget that these ships are built with living materials. Walls and fabrics opening and closing at will, each time reminds me of the outstanding level of their mastery of molecular technology. The access ramp was already deployed, and we walked down it. The air was cold, and I shivered as it poured into my lungs. I coughed, then took a very deep breath, noticing that my body was adapting quite quickly to the difference in atmospheric pressure. My ears were buzzing slightly, but it eased eventually as I managed to relax. Thorhan's hand, firm and warm, was like a boy I was holding onto, in this unknown and frightening place, so far away from Earth. As beautiful or amazing as it can be, the unknown has always its part of frightening. I was slightly shaking, maybe more from nervousness than from cold. A floating vehicle was waiting for us, in the shape of a rectangular board with a metallic banister, piloted by some sort of android incorporated at the front. It made me think about, you know, these motorized carriers in the airports on Earth, transporting luggage. So we stepped on it. I first didn't understand why Thorhan seized my arm firmly to bring me against his side. Until I found myself suddenly projected backwards with a little shout as the vehicle rocketed through the place. Fortunately, the fabric of Thorhan's uniform is solid enough. Saladin laughed at me, his long blonde hair floating in the wind gracefully. Thorhan was biting his lip to contain the laugh. Moving at great speed along a corridor leading to lower levels, we finally emerged into a great and amazing hall filled with light. The high buildings were made of glass and metallic structures. This place was gigantic. A real city. My attention was caught gazing toward the view behind the huge bay windows, through which we could glimpse Jupiter's clouds dancing outside in powerful twirling winds. We were at cloud level of one of the numerous atmospheric layers, as if inside a big ship sailing on an ocean of clouds, under a tormented thundering sky. I felt Thorhan's hand tightening over mine. Come on, he said on a hasty tone, the commander is waiting for me. I followed him as if wandering through a dream. The hall included different modules of graceful buildings defying the laws of gravity. I felt my feet stepping onto a sliding automatic staircase and I grabbed Thorhan's sleeve to keep balance. How clumsy must have I seemed, to all these people passing by, moving with confidence and poise. It is then that I noticed the diversity of races among them. It was like in my book. My heart pounded as I realized I could probably identify most of them. We touched solid ground and my focus was brought to a tall blonde man in uniform, hair neatly cut short, coming toward us. My companions bowed their heads to him, a hand on their chest, and I imitated them. He was probably the officer Thorhan came here to meet. How exciting! I felt suddenly a cold breeze brushing through my head. This man was telepathically probing my mind, wondering who I was, and it was rather intimidating. Thorhan exchanged with the Ashtar officer a telepathic conversation, then addressed to me with a tender smile. "I need to go with him now," he said. "Saladin will take care of you. See you maybe later." With a wink of the eye, he turned away to follow the officer. Saladin dropped a friendly hand on my shoulder. "Come, we'll wait over there." I followed my young Erehel friend down to large translucent steps leading to a lower level. A wide and high bay window occupied the whole side of the hall and I was fascinated by the contrast of the inside with the outside, peaceful atmosphere against atmospheric violence. Under tormented orange skies, dark grey clouds were brushing the structure of the building and it was mesmerizing. I was speechless. Saladin laid a shoulder against the glass and stared by my side, pensive, at the tormented Jovian universe. End of this Lookers audio, and for the rest, get the book.